Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Everyone, and welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. My name is Taylor, and I am joined, as always, by my very good friend and co-host, Kelly. Kelly, how's it going?
It is going good. How about you?
I am doing well. I'm a little bit sleepy. I had to wake up very early for a work thing yesterday, so I had to wake up at 6 in the morning.
Saturday?
And I'm still tired, because I'm aging, and I don't, you know, you don't recover as well. I used to be able to be like, oh, I'll stay up all night, and then I'll just recover the next day, and I'll be fine. That doesn't work anymore.
No.
I'm like, when I'm tired for at least 3 days. So I'm tired a little bit.
Understandable.
What's keeping me awake? My excitement of another episode of Jumping Bomb Audio.
Oh.
Of course. I am curious. Kelly and I were talking about this before the show. A little peek behind the scenes. Our podcast recording location has informed us that we are now recording in higher definition audio than we ever have before. Broadcast level audio. I want someone listening to this, or anyone, or many people, tell us if there is any difference, because I'm certainly not going to be able to tell. Kelly, no. I'll say you sound the same you always do.
Same. Yeah. No, I would actually think it's very funny if people comment and they're like, you guys sound like shit this week.
What happened? You sound horrible. So we'll see. But now, Jumping Bomb Audio coming to you in even higher definition than before. You can hear our perfect and correct takes even clearer than you ever have before. Don't get them confused.
Yep.
Well, we've got a lot of Joshi to talk about this week. Before we do, we got to get to the plugs. Follow us on Blue Sky at JBomb Audio. You can follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly, and you can follow me at TayMambo. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. And if that app of choice is Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating and review. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. So let's get into it. We are going to dive deep into one of the biggest shows of the last 2 weeks. That would be Tokyo Joshi's Wrestle Princess 6 from Oda City General Gymnasium back on September 20th in front of 1,000 127 fans. Kelly, what were your thoughts on the overall show?
I had a great time with the show. I would say the first half was, you know, just kind of okay, as a lot of first halves of shows are. But I think things really picked up in the back part of the show. And overall, I had, like I said, I had a great time.
I thought it was all right. There was a couple matches with that I was sort of hopeful would be a little bit better, which we'll talk about. But I thought it was good. I thought the main event was very good, as we'll talk about. But I think Kelly and I may disagree on the main event a little bit. Because I think, Kelly, I think I saw your opinion on this match out in the world. But we haven't talked about it yet.
Mm-mm.
So
gotta save it for the show.
Let's dive in. I guess first we can talk about 1,127 fans.
Not great.
Felt not great to me, but then I went back and I realized I believe it's the second highest attended Wrestle Princess they've ever done. Like, that's the weird thing, is I was like, this is not a great number. I mean, to be fair, the first Wrestle Princess was height of COVID, no attendance.
Yeah.
In a way that I'm like, they probably would have gone over this number had there been fans. I mean, you can't really say that or not say that, because you don't know what would have happened in that alternate dimension where there's no COVID shutdowns.
Oh, I want to be there.
But that was back when, you know, it was such a big deal that they were running these big shows that I think the shows themselves were in a way the draw. Because, yeah, because I was looking at this and I was like, that number is not great. It must have gotten beaten out by all these other Wrestle Princesses. And then I was like, well, never mind. Let's take a look. I looked at this on Cage Match when I was thinking about this.
So it's a solid number in the context of Tokyo Joshi. It's not a great number in the wider wrestling context.
Yes, I would agree with that. So Wrestle Princess 2 was 914, which was at Oda City.
Okay.
Same venue. Obviously, Wrestle Princess 1 was 0. Wrestle Princess 3 was 1,007. Wrestle Princess 4 was 868. Wrestle Princess 5 was 756.
Oh.
So they've actually reversed a quite scary trend.
Okay.
But maybe not as much as you would hope.
Yeah, but there it's looking all right, so then.
And it's the first time they've been back at Oda City since the second one, which was 914, and it is an improvement over that.
So it's the highest drawing Wrestle Princess then?
Yeah,
right?
I guess it is. I don't know what I was thinking where I was like, oh, something else outdrew it, but I guess it is the highest one.
It was the one from the universe where there is no shutdown.
Correct. Yeah. Which had a zero. Wow, I'm looking at this first card. What a blast from the past. Tenma on the show, Hikari Noah. Seri on this show. I don't remember.
Oh,
that.
Wow.
I could have never named that Seri was on the first Wrestle.
Who was she against?
It was a tag team match. Aja Kong and Miyu Yamashita versus Maki Ito and Seri.
Oh, okay.
Also,
I don't
on the
know
card,
how that sounds, because I think that was before Maki got good.
Also on the card, Mirai.
Sure.
I'm like, that was that long ago. I guess it was. I think of Mirai as leaving before that point, but I guess she didn't.
Yeah, it was during the pandemic that she left.
Yeah, but anyway, a totally different world. But yes, Kelly, I think you're right. I think the general point is a sort of solid, good number for Tokyo Joshi, not a great number in the wider world of wrestling. I think John put together an attendance for Oda City, and I think 1127 is either last or second to last.
Either way, both of those spots are held by Tokyo Joshi.
So, I mean, better than if it would have been like, oh, it's 600, then it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Bad. But let's get into the show itself. The first match, the Goblin Twins of, oh, I did something very stupid here. I pasted the results, and by pasted the results, I mean...
you just put the card.
Yep. all right. Anyway, but I was going to say, the Goblin Twins, Mei Suruga and Uta Takami, defeating Ren Kanatsu and Suzume in 12 minutes and 55 seconds. Kelly, what do you think of this opening match?
I thought this kind of rocked. Just a really fun opener. I love the Goblin Twins as a team, and I really hope that they start to bring in Mei more regularly to make them a regular team. I think that'll help Uta's growth as a wrestler quite a bit. I think the Koala Cut Clutch is an amazing move. Like, I love that. It's a great name. It's really good. I thought Mei and Suzume had some really good exchanges. And Dan, I loved this. I went 3.75.
My one note, I enjoyed it. I was not as high as you. I thought it was a solid match. My one note was, Ren Kanatsu is so funny because she is, you know, only a handful of matches under her belt. She is a rookie. She's learning. And she'll just, like, go through a match. Being a rookie, you're like, okay, she's looking pretty okay. And then she will pull out the craziest move that has ever been done in Tokyo Joshi history. Like, randomly 3/4 through the match, and you're like, what the heck? Like, she did the flipping something off the rope, and I was like, that is the craziest thing that's ever been done in this company. It's happening in the opening match by the rookie who has mostly just sort of been wandering around this match the rest of the time.
She has the spirit of a yarder.
She has the same thing, and, you know, not to be mean, I hope it doesn't go this way, but she has a similar energy to the way Kaya Toribami was, when she started, where she would sort of pull those things out, and it was like, oh, she's just doing this. And then she's doing a rope assisted, you know, arm drag. And you were like, oh, wow, that's crazy. Now, I hope it doesn't go that way, because Haru has sort of just wandered the wilderness of Tokyo Joshi for however long. But I'm like, wow, I can't wait to see until she's busting out more of these things and not just like won a match to fill the quota of, look at this insane thing I can do.
It'll be fun to see the results where it's like Ren Kanatsu defeats Chika Nanase with Burning Hammer.
The next match was the DDT Iron Man Heavy Metal Weight Title Delayed Entry a Battle Royal. I guess the result is Mihiro Kiryu pinned Raku and Raku's Pillow to win the title. Pokatan came in as the champion. Their head immediately fell off before the match began. Had it been revealed, I haven't followed Pokatan that closely. Has it been revealed that their inner head is a black skull?
I don't know, but it's an absolute nightmare.
Because at first I thought, oh, we're going to see who's inside. And then I was like, oh, wait. We aren't, although they did a move that made me think, I know who's in here. When they did a Shining Wizard.
Yeah, it's Keiji Muto.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he had to retire.
Mm-hmm.
He has a very busy schedule as Pokatan. This match saw, as I mentioned in the result, Raku's Pillow win the title in the middle of the match. Kelly, what were your thoughts on this one?
It was fun nonsense. Like, it wasn't really like any good, but I had a fun time with it. I slapped 3 stars on it and moved on.
Yeah, I wrote what to really say about this match.
Yeah.
It didn't even really feel like a Tokyo Joshi match. It felt like some random thing happening. It also, I think, is we just had one of these. where it becomes very hard to be like, aha, another one of these that will be totally unique and different than the last one that we just saw, which of course it was not. But I would agree with you. I think just fine. You're like, that was what it probably was expected to be. And
it did feel like it overstayed its welcome, which is like the highest possible compliment I can pay to a match like this. You know, like I wasn't watching it and being like, ugh. It was just, ha 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 ha. Oh, that's a good one. Oh, look at the pillow. It's just like, okay, cool. I'm not bored.
It was the third longest match on the show.
Not surprising.
I will say. But anyway, the next match was our first singles match. Aja Kong defeating Himawari in 8 minutes and 53 seconds. I like the hair attacks against Aja. Other than that, this very much was an Aja Kong, Tokyo Joshi, rookie young person match.
Yeah, it was a tad more wacky than I was hoping for. But Aja Kong did just murder Himawari with that backdrop driver to finish the match, and that was awesome.
The next match was an unexpected match. Was not on our preview 2 weeks ago, because at the time it was not scheduled. An injury on the card forced some shuffling. So it was the Flag Scramble Authorized Weapon Death Match, Palm Harajuku defeating Rika Tatsumi in 11 minutes and 1 second. Kelly, I'm interested to hear what you thought of this, because I had one very strong feeling about this, and I wonder if you felt the same way or if it was just me.
All my notes say is this was terrible, but also great. 2 stars.
It felt so weirdly short.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like at just some point it was like, and now it's done.
Yeah, we're done now. We ran out of ideas.
I'm like, look, I know it was a last minute, you know, quote unquote last minute thing. May have been a scramble around to be like, oh, you know, we have to move things around. What can we do? But it felt like they did like 2 or 3 things and then we're like, oh, we're good. Goodbye. It didn't really go anywhere.
No.
Like, so I was like, oh, like, sort of funny, but didn't really build to anything like big. Like, I'm so used to the big ones, especially like the DDT ones, which are like, here's 50 million things that are going to happen in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all on top of each other. This was like, okay, we'll get like 2 or 3 weapons and then we'll just end the match.
I think it would have been a very fun way to play it if Palm's like weapon choices were like actual deathmatch weapons and they just spent the match Rika trying to avoid ever having to use them. Like Rika just, you know, she has the fan or whatever, and then Palm's just like light tubes.
But yeah, at this point I was like, I wish one of these matches would have sort of popped off, because this point I was sort of like, well, like you liked the first match, so that probably was helpful for you, but I was sort of like, would love to have like something exciting happening. And the next match was Hiroyo Matsumoto and Yuki Arai defeating Haru Kazushiro and Toga in 13 minutes and 52 seconds. My one note on this, I thought it was a fun match. Nothing crazy, but I will say that Tokyo Joshi has become really good at finding the type of outside talent and opponents that their younger workers feel like they need to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So like here, it was Toga and Hiroyo Matsumoto, where it was like, yes.
No,
this feels
Toga was
like...
with Haru.
No. I'm saying to face off.
Oh, like, yes. Okay. Against.
Yeah. To be like, this is the type of person, like your style is sort of going this way. Here's someone who's in that similar style for you to like go against, and I feel like improve, as opposed to being like, Toga, go work Palm Harajuku in 50 matches.
Yeah.
it just felt like they, style-wise, it's like, okay, this is sort of what you're aiming for, Toga, to be sort of a Hiroyo Matsumoto, like, big, strong wrestler type, and to bring her in and be like, okay, you can face off and hopefully learn something, I think is really great. They did that, obviously, with the Mizunami stuff really well. I thought the highlight of this match was the Toga and Matsumoto face-offs. So the match itself, I wasn't like, this is a great match, go out of your way to find this match, but it's an important match, and it felt like it's going to help Toga down the line, where it's like, ah, she's gotten better. You can point back to that match and be like, oh yeah, it was that match that helped.
Mm-hmm. My main takeaway from this match was that I thought Yuki Arai was fucking terrible here. There was a bit in the match where she was going to go for the final eight, and Toga was off on her timing by maybe a second, and it threw off Arai for the rest of the match. Like, she had to quickly improvise something to explain why she was, you know, not hitting the move, and it fucked her up real bad. So I don't know. I came away from this match thinking much less of Yuki Arai as a worker. But I did come away thinking Haru keeps getting better and better and better, and her new arm breaker figure four thing is awesome. Like, that move is so cool.
The next match was another tag team match. Speaking of, just talked about her, Ryo Mizunami and Yuki Aino defeating Kaya Toribami and Mio Yamashita in 13 minutes and 11 seconds when Aino pinned Mio Yamashita to win the match. A big result. I thought, you know, I was sitting there going, oh, I want one of these matches to pop off, and this was that match.
This was so good.
I thought it was really good. I went 4 stars. I think it's so interesting. And I was like, well, they don't really do anything with her. And then at the end of the show, that sort of became untrue. So I was sort of proven wrong by the end of the show. But at this moment in time, I was like, Yuki Aino is one of the most consistently good roster members in these, like, sort of mid-card, like, could just go out there and fuck around matches, where I'm like, she is really good, consistently good, sort of weirdly out of nowhere. I mean, she had, you know, a bit ago, had the great matches where we were like, oh, she's gotten much better. What, you know, because there was a time when we were like, is she just going to, like, retire? She's lost her tag team partner. She's sort of not doing anything. And this is now the second or third match on these big shows where she's, like, in the mid card and they just have a really good match, and it's largely because of her that they have the good matches. So I'm excited. I guess I'll just get ahead of it. At the end of the show, she came out to challenge for the Princess of Princess title, so good to see that she's getting that. Also have to say, you know, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes with everyone. I don't know what the whole deal is. You know, Maki is leaving. Miyu is becoming leader of the promotion. I mean, Miyu losing here when the whole story has been, you know, up to this point, it's like, no one can beat her. You know, you have to do X, Y, and Z thing. Even the people who should have beaten her probably at times lost to her. To her be like, okay, I'm going to stick around. You know, I'm a big deal. I'll go to the United States. I'll do this. And to come back and be like, yeah, I'll lose in this mid-card tag team match when I've got Kaya Toribami on my team. Like, respect to her.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, you know, I'm not trying to say anything bad about Maki Ito, but interesting that it's like, well, Maki's like, I'm just going to dip out and go wrestle in the United States. And Miyu, who I think inarguably is the bigger player in Tokyo Joshi, is willing to be like, well, I'll stick around, I'll do my thing, and then I'll come back and I'll put people over. Like, that's great to me.
And, like, she wasn't only pinned, she tapped out. Which is,
oh,
like,
that's right.
When, I don't know if I ever recall that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a thing in 6 months if Miyu Yamashita is losing every match he's in. If I'm going to say the same thing, maybe I'll be like, okay, maybe you could win one or two. I have a feeling that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is why I say it. But I was like, that's great. It felt like a big deal. Yuki wrestled a really good match and then doesn't just pin Kai and it's like, oh, of course, you pin the pin eater of the team. It's like, mm-hmm. you got a big win. And that's why you can come out at the end and be like, I think I deserve a title shot.
And it's like, yeah, you do.
Yeah, it's like, fair play. So I thought this was really great. I went 4 stars. Easily the highlight of the undercard.
Did you notice the bit when Miyu was walking to the back after the match that she like picked up some of the paper tape and took it with her?
I don't think so.
Yeah, like that was watching that. I was like, is she like gone after this match? You know, because it felt like kind of a goodbye almost. It was very interesting. But like, I absolutely loved this match. Thought it was just awesome, much needed shot in the arm for the show at this point. The exchanges between Miyu and Mizunami were so good. I loved the bit when Mizunami has them in the corner and she's doing the rapid fire chops and she's just like chopping with one hand and just blowing chef's kisses with the other hand like a completely insane person. I also really enjoyed Kaya Toribami just holding Miyu there so she would get chopped and not her. That was very fun. Kaya's new gear here was, I thought, really cool, and she looked really good in this match. So just everyone was firing on all cylinders. Great shit. I went 4.25 on this one.
All right, then we get into the big title matches of the evening. The first for the vacant International Princess title, Arisa Endo finally ascending that mountain, winning the title, defeating Priscilla Kelly in 10 minutes and 59 seconds. Kelly, what were your thoughts?
I really liked this. It was cool to see Endo finally win the big one. The accidental blood near the end kind of helped elevate things a bit, make it feel more even hard fought than it was. We talked about last time that neither of us had seen Priscilla Kelly wrestle in quite a while, and I thought she was still good here, so that was awesome. And I think it would be good if Tokyo Joshi brings her back and kind of makes her regular-ish, you know. But yeah, good stuff. I went 4 stars.
I wasn't as high as you. I thought it was solid. I was sort of like, yes, this is sort of how I thought I would feel about someone who is just jumping into the promotion. You know, this match wasn't originally the scheduled match, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of like, ah, what should we do? I mean, the highlight for me was the completion of the story of, okay, Endo now wins the title, and sort of what is now the next step in this story of Endo and Suzume. Like, is it, what is it? Is it that Endo challenge, you know, holds the title for a long time? Is it that she doesn't hold the title for a long time and they go and they win the tag titles again? Like, what is the story? But I'm glad to see that it now has progressed. I think you had talked about, you know, what if Priscilla Kelly wins? I think we had messaged about that.
Because when we recorded, that wasn't announced yet.
And I don't know. I think it would just be like another, it sort of would turn into that Maki Ito story from years ago where it was like, she can't win the big one. And then eventually it became a thing where it was like, here we go. She's got a chance to win the big one. Oop. She lost again. She can't win the big one. And then 6 months later, it'd be like, can she win the big one? No, she can't. She
still
can't
no.
win the big one. Yeah. And it's like, at some point you're just like, okay, so she is, you know, this is not happening. Like, it has to happen, or eventually it doesn't happen so many times that you're like, oh, I don't really care if you try again. Like, eventually, it's diminishing returns. So I'm happy that they did it here, and it's like, okay, she's done it, and now what is step, you know, I don't know, C or D. I don't know what step we're on.
Suzume turns heel and becomes a hornet rather than a bee.
Oh, interesting.
Or a wasp. Which ones don't we like?
Spicy honey mustard.
Yeah.
There you go. But yeah, I thought it was fine. Wasn't crazy about it, but I don't know that I was expecting to be crazy about it. I think had it been Jada, I would have been like, okay, this will be great. Because they've wrestled. Jada is sort of, I would say, of the people who have come. I mean, she's been on a lot of shows. She's mm-hmm. sort of like a tangential Tokyo Joshi roster member, which obviously Priscilla Kelly is not, because she's been in NXT for the last 6 years. How long?
Sure.
A while. Anyway, the semi-main of this show was for the Princess Tag Team titles. Uber Eats, the team of Wakina Uehara and Yuki Kamifuku, defeating Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima to win the titles in 17 minutes and 2 seconds. Kelly, your thoughts?
I thought this match felt a little messy, but was all right for the most part. There was a couple spots for both teams where just things didn't work out the way they wanted them to. I thought Wakana and Misao had a really good exchange of forearms in the match that I enjoyed. And I thought it was interesting how they kind of worked around the match around Wakana's busted teeth and like found ways to work over her teeth or her face. Like that was clever on Misao and Nakajima's part. But, you know, overall, solid semi-main, nothing great. I think I went 3 3/4 on it.
I think I was close. My biggest takeaway was that Shoko Nakajima felt like she was in a different league than everyone else.
Yeah.
Wrestling-wise. Like, it would be like, okay, this is fine. And then Shoko would come in and you would be like, oh my God, she's so much better than all these other people in this match. You know, I like Yuki. Yuki was sort of the first experiment of put the international princess title on someone to sort of elevate them and then see if they improve. And I felt like when she had that title, it was sort of like, okay, I think things are coming together. Like she's improving, she's getting better. And I feel like watching this match, I was like, oh, but since then she really has not gotten any better.
Yeah.
Like the progress sort of stopped. I don't know why. I don't know if it was like, well, now I'm sort of in the upper mid card, and so this is what I should keep doing, and this is fine. It just feels like to me, I'm like, she's not a super worker. Not that anyone in this company is, but not even like a super worker. But I'm like, okay, now I'm thinking about this team defending the tag titles. And, you know, with Hyper and Shoko, I was like, obviously Shoko is great, but I'm like, Hyper Masao, even, you know, she may come out and do some comedy, but if it's like, we got to turn it on, she's shown, we can turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we need to go. Wakana is very young. I think she works hard, but I don't know who on this team where it's like, the next big show, you know, in March, if they get to March, I don't know if they get to March, but let's just say they do. They're going to have a semi-main event against, I don't know, someone. Who on this team is it like they're going to have a semi-main event and they're going to show up and they're going to turn it on to have a great match? Because I think at this point, it's got to be Wakana.
Yeah, no, Wakana is definitely the workhorse of the team.
But I'm like, she's so young where it's like, I would put her with someone, like it's almost like I would put her with Shoko.
Yes.
Because then it's like, okay, I know, you know, Wakana can be a rookie. She's probably going to make some mistakes, but I know at the end of the day, Shoko's going to come in here and she's going to flip all over the ropes and she's going to look great. She's going to work really hard and that'll be fine. This team, I'm like, I don't know about that. So I was sort of with you. I thought it was fine. I thought the beginning was like really slow, like, I did like the whole thing with the teeth, but there was a point where I was like, can we just like get into the match? Like there was so much like, what are you doing? I'm eating a cheeseburger. I'm doing this. I'm like, just start wrestling. Like do some wrestling now, please.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle. Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
A good win for them. I am interested. We were talking about what is the Endo story. I'm interested to see if this is a transitional. I mean, I can't imagine. I just said, oh, imagine them in March. I can't imagine them holding these titles for 6 months.
No. Like, but shit, like, they might be transitional champions to get to Toga and Yuna Manase.
They could be. Yeah. So, yeah, but I was with you. I thought it picked up near the end, especially, as I said, the Shoko stuff I thought was really good, but didn't blow me away. Masao and Nakajima had better matches in this reign. So I went 3 3/4 as well. And then the main event, the Princess of Princess title match, Miyu Watanabe defeating Mizuki to start her second reign in 22 minutes and 58 seconds with a spinning teardrop to win the title. Kelly, your thoughts?
I absolutely loved this match. Just, they beat the shit out of each other. It felt really kind of visceral and violent in a way that a lot of matches don't. You know, Mizuki is just crushing Miyu with these double foot stomps, and Miyu's blasting Mizuki with the baseball chops and stuff. Like, just the offense looked really nasty. There was a bit where Mizuki was on the mat, like, struggling for breath, that looked like it was weirdly uncomfortable to watch because it felt real. Like, it looked like she got the wind knocked out of her or something. I don't know if she did or if she was just selling. And if she was selling, it looked incredible. So I thought they both put in incredible performances here and were both so good. Just an excellent main event. I went 4 3/4.
I did see that you went that. My expectations were very high. Like, my expectation was like, this can be a 5-star match. I thought the beginning, getting into it, was a little bit clunky. Like, there was a little bit of clunkiness where it was like, this is not quite going together. Like, I would probably go 4 1/4.
Wow.
In that I liked
podcast
it, but I was like,
over.
I know. Kelly's about to send anthrax to my house.
Yeah, why'd you hate this match, Taylor?
But once they got into it, I enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed, you know, we may have talked about this on the show. I've always sort of found Miyu's finishing moves to sort of be like, meh, okay. Like, they've gotten better, but I really liked, I mean, I think the spinning teardrop looks better than the teardrop as a finisher, because the teardrop is sort of like, whoop, like, whoops, I just dropped you. The spinning teardrop looked great, but I like it as a story of, you know, this person has beaten me before for this title. I went out, I had to get better. I win the tournament, and now I have to go and I have to do something and I have to improve and make myself better. And it's like, here's what I've done. I've made a super finishing move of like this spinning teardrop, which I thought was a great story. Happy to see, I think, as we talked about in the preview, would have been happy to see Mizuki retain, but happy to see Miyu win. Really great. So I thought it was really good. I think it's just that my expectations were through the roof, because I was like, this could be the best match in Tokyo Joshi history. And it was just that beginning felt a little bit like, you know, I was like, they don't feel exactly like they're on the same page.
I kind of, like, I know what you're talking about, but I took that on almost a positive way. I kind of liked that it was clunky and it felt like a struggle.
Now, I will ask, were you listening to the English commentary?
Yes.
Okay. Because I think I said this last big show for Tokyo Joshi, and I have to say it again. I think you and I are probably the people who like Aki on commentary most out of like the vast majority of wrestling fans. Someone has to tell him. There are times when I'm like, I get that he's on commentary trying to like get over a story of whatever the whatever is happening in the, like a bigger story than just like what is happening in the match. But sometimes you just need to talk about what is going on in the match.
Yeah.
And there were two major times when like they were hitting each other really hard. And Aki is on commentary being like, you know, in the your mind's eye will never comprehend the things that your body is willing to do. Like, not talking about anything that's going on in the match and like just monologuing for like 3 minutes about just like the general idea of fighting hard. Mm-hmm. And it's like sometimes you just need someone to sit on commentary and be like, oh my God, they're hitting each other really hard. Like, this is crazy. We're in the venue and those elbows, they're echoing against the wall. Instead of, you know, at the beginning of the match when they're standing across from each other or they're circling each other or they're doing, you know, reversal standoff. Like, at that point, you can, like, go wild. This is a match of, you know, strength versus speed and, you know, what will pay off near the end of the match where you're like, we are fighting for our lives, we are doing X, Y, and Z thing, like just call the match. Like,
yeah.
Mr. Haku did that with that moment of Mizuki like gasping for air. He was like, oh my God, does she get the wind knocked out of her? Like, what is going on? Like, that really helped sell that moment of she's laying on the mat being like, instead of being like, you know, a warrior mentality is the bravest of all things in life. Like,
oxygen is the food the body needs to keep going. She is trying to eat.
It's like, that's all great. I totally understand what you're going for. But at that point in the match, you are taking a, you're distracting from the match because you're saying, forget what you're watching. Listen to me.
Yeah.
Like, I am not there lifting up what is happening. I am somewhere else doing something else. Like, as if the match was happening and someone walked in and was like, now during this point, I'm going to do 5 minutes of a stand-up routine. The stand-up routine can be great. It doesn't help what's going on in the ring. Like, and at the end of the day, I know that the English commentary is very lax. I don't know if they're overseeing, if anyone is overseeing them, whatever is happening. But it doesn't matter what you do. You are there to help the match and try and sell it. And to be fair, I think that is what Aki is trying to do.
Yeah, I think it is too.
I think it's just not properly timed and it becomes distracting. Like,
yeah.
It was very distracting to me when I was like, oh my God, they're hitting each other. And then I'm like, what is commentary saying? What are they saying right now? And it was some random blah, 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 whatever.
I feel like Aki went to the same commentary school that Vampiro did before Lucha Underground.
I never watched a lot of Lucha Underground. I think I watched like two episodes or something.
Okay.
So.
I feel like they're very similar.
I mean, again, I totally understand the instinct of it. It's the instinct of I'm trying to tell the story. I'm trying to assist. I'm telling the bigger picture of the story. I'm making it bigger than just, oh, it's a wrestling match. But again, it has a moment when they're doing their, you know, when they're walking to the ring, you know, doing it then. When they're circling each other at the beginning of the match. Fine. At the end of the match, when they're kicking out of things and they're hitting each other really hard, like, that's the thing. That's what people came to see.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't need convincing at that point of like, no, you have to understand this match is bigger than just a wrestling match. It's a this, you know, it's a human struggle. It's like, at this point, we're in. We're watching the match and we're near the end of the match. Like, we're not going to be like, should I watch this? Like, I'm watching it. You sold me. You did it. So just help me understand what's actually happening at the moment in the ring.
My favorite all-time Aki moment is still the last show. Not this show, but the show prior, where they showed like the English commentary team on the feed. And Aki just goes, oh, fucking goddamn.
There was some moment I started the show and they were doing all the announcements and like Haku and Aki were talking at the table or something. And they were, and Aki was doing his usual, like, you know, oh, you're at home, get food, you know,
yeah,
do what you want, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, I've heard this a million times. Like, and nothing in the ring is like, it's just the announcement to the crowd to be like, don't take videos. So I was like, I'll fast forward a little. I fast forwarded a little. I hit play and Aki's like, and if you murdered someone, no one would ever know. And I was like, what the heck? I was like, how did we get here? It was just very, it was very funny because it was out of nowhere. And I was like, you know what? I can't go back. I have to keep fast forwarding.
That's so good.
But yeah. What else happened in the last 2 weeks? Well, Stardom had a very big Corican Hall show on September 22nd in front of 1,639 fans. Let me tell you, watching that video, that place looked jam-packed.
It sure did. They fit every single person they possibly could have into that building. And it's really cool that because of that, they're like, oh, people still want to come to this show. We can't fit them all. All right, you can watch it on YouTube. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah. I love more shows should be on YouTube. I love being able to watch them on my TV without having to cast or do magic, voodoo magic, with my computer or whatever. Really great, easy to access. So if you haven't seen the show, very easy to check out. Go to YouTube, go to Stardom's page. I think as of now, it's the first result. If you look up Stardom, if you go to Stardom's YouTube channel, the two big matches, well, Kelly, I should say, do you have anything to say about any of the undercard matches?
Not much. I thought the Cosmic Angels or the Natsupoi Sayori teaming with Tei Hanma, to face the Young Wrestlers was pretty good. And it looks like we're getting Tei Hanma versus Rana in a singles match at some point, which should be fun. The three-way 12-person tag was a lot of fun. It was very much one of those, hey, Stardom's really good when they're doing Dragon Gate shit matches.
The two big matches on this card were two title matches. The Future of Stardom title, Hanako winning the title, defeating Hina in 14 minutes and 11 seconds. I watched this one. I was sort of watching the first, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 minutes. I was like, yep, this is, you know, another solid, fine Future of Stardom title match. They really kicked it up near the end. I thought it was really good. I thought it really had great pace, finished well, obviously big result. I went 4 stars on this. I thought it was really good. I was distracted by the ref, who I don't know that I've ever seen before, that looked sort of like Daichi, but is not Daichi.
I'm telling, there is like Daichi doppelgangers.
I was like, what is Daichi doing? What? Why is he over? And then I was like, is that him? And then he came out for the next match, and I was like, wait a minute, who is that guy then?
Yeah, they've got like clones of Daichi that weren't like fully cooked.
Yeah, but really liked the match. A solid end to Hina's reign, and excited to see what Hanako does with the title.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see how she grows with her title reign, because it really feels like everyone that's had it in recent memory just gets better and better with every defense, and Hina included in that. I thought she had a great title reign, so I'm very excited to see how Hanako grows as a wrestler. And you know, just really good match. I was just shy of you. I went 3 3/4.
Also unrelated, I mean, related to the show, but unrelated to this specific match. Did you see the weird horse on the apron?
You know what? No, I noticed. Okay. Boat Race was.
Yeah, Boat Race is a sponsor. Like a weird picture of, I think it was a horse. And I'm like, has that been on the apron before and I've never noticed it? Or is that a, is that a new thing? Someone explain.
Yeah, I did not notice the horse, but I did get excited when I saw Boat Race, because whenever I see Boat Race, sponsoring a show, it makes me smile.
And then the main event was a double title match, the World of Stardom title and the New Japan Strong Women's title on the line as Saya Kamatani retains the World of Stardom title and wins the New Japan Strong title from Azumi in 23 minutes and 10 seconds. I mean, I thought this was a great match. I went 4.5 stars. Really well paced, hard worked, exciting, fun. Hate, almost no interference. I think there was two moments of interference, one moment of interference at the beginning of the match.
They got it out of the way really quick.
And it wasn't all of this box, I'm running in the ring, I'm doing this, we're talking to the ref for 15 minutes thing. It was mostly, you know, I'm like, okay, you want to trip Azumi at the beginning of the match? Like, I don't really care about that.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I just thought it was a really good match, well worked, you know, definitive finish. Very easily could have gone to a time limit draw where you're like, ah, they both keep their titles. That would have been the Rossi finish. Had
a single tear rolls down the Hat Man's cheek.
And they didn't do that, and great match. And I mean, I figured Saya was winning. I didn't really have any doubt because I don't see any reason why you take the title off her at this point when she seems like one of the hottest acts in all of wrestling. But I just thought it was superb match for, and I went 4.5 stars.
Yeah, this was fucking awesome. like, aside from the moments of them like selling, this match moved at a mile a minute. There was so much happening all the time. The crowd was super into it. I didn't think Azumi was going to win, but boy howdy, I bit on both of the like two Azumi Sushi near falls. And what a great move that is. Like, I love that there is a wrestler out there that has like this just cool pinning combination that can win matches, and it's just like, yep, that's perfectly makes sense. It really reminds me of the how Bryan Danielson used to use the small package back in Ring of Honor, where it's just like, yep, that was just a match ender. He was really good at that specific pin and was able to win title matches with that. So there was the brief moment where I was like, oh shit, they're letting Azumi do it. And then, you know, she kicked out. My lone complaint about the match was Saya kicking out of the Avalanche Canadian Destroyer. It just seemed, it was very much a moment of, well, these girls might be doing too much now. Like, that was just my inner old man coming out for a second. But other than that, I thought it was incredible. Saya said that she wants to take Stardom to the Tokyo Dome. And at this point, I think she can probably do it. She got Joshi on like regular Japanese TV for the first time in, what was it, 23 years this week. So it's like, she's on a roll. She may be the single hottest wrestler in Japan at the moment. And yeah, let's keep on going. We are long past the pinnacle of Joshi Pro Wrestling. I went through 4.75. I absolutely loved this.
I did think, you mentioned the crowd. I did think about the crowd, and I thought back to, what, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, when we were like, these Stardom crowds stink. They're so bad. And everyone was like, oh, you don't understand. They're just
really respectful.
They're very respectful. They're new fans, and they don't understand you need to cheer, which was wrong. There was something else you said. I was going to say, and we always make the comparison to Dragon Gate, the Azumi Sushi, very much like the Backslide of Heaven.
Yep.
That Genki Horiguchi does. So, yes. So that was Stardom. Definitely worth checking out because it was a good show, but also because it's on YouTube totally free.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how long it'll be up there, though. So best watch it while you can.
Marigold, not a lot of in-ring action happening, but it was announced that it will be Io Sky versus Mayu Iwatani at Marigold Grand Destiny, their big show in October. Kelly, I think I said this to you. Look, the match will be excellent.
Yeah, it'll be awesome.
All of their matches are. This feels to me like it will be an excellent match, and then the show will be over, and it will not help Marigold at all.
No.
Io Sky will go back to WWE. She will leave. No one in the promotion. Look.
She might go back and take Mayu with her.
But it's like, oh, it will help Mayu. Mayu doesn't need any help. She's the biggest star in the company.
It's not like she's going to beat Io here.
Yeah. It's just a thing where I'm like, yeah, it'll be a great match. It doesn't matter. It doesn't help the company. All the issues that we've talked about over the past number of episodes, which we won't rehash here, it doesn't help any of those. You know, you're trying to make stars. It's your big show. You know what the match everyone's going to be talking about? This match. It's not going to be Utami and Miku, which is going to, I believe, be the main event, although maybe it won't be the main event.
And honestly, putting those two matches on the same show really hurts the main event. You're going to burn out the crowd before then. And like, let's say Miku wins there. No one's going to be talking about that win.
Yeah, so, you know, again, look.
It's desperation booking.
And it's just sort of uncreative.
Yeah.
In my mind, it's just sort of like, well, this is what we have. Look, they had amazing, incredible matches in Stardom. Like I said, the match will be very good. It just doesn't help this company that needs something to happen other than, oh, wow, this cool person from WWE is coming here. You know, especially at this moment in time when WWE is, you know. I'm sure the fans in Japan will go and won't care, but I'm like, are people really like, especially now EO is being pushed in WWE. It's like, yes. I don't need to, oh, WWE fan, don't you want to sign up for Wrestle Universe to watch one EO Sky match? It's like, no, I've been watching her have good matches the last few months. So anyway, moving on, Seedling had a show that had on September 19th, that had a Beyond the Sea tag title match. Miyu Shirai and Natsu Sumire defeating Ka Kedita and La Pedita.
We're still
retain,
doing this, huh?
Yeah, we'll be doing it till the end of time to retain their titles. Sendai Girls had a big show in Sendai, the big matches on that. They had the number one contender match between FWC and Bobo Momo Banana. That was a solid match. You know, it was the opener, so it was a solid opener. I was sort of hoping they would come out and have one of those like banger openers where it's like, whoa, kick off the show. You know, I thought it was 3.5 stars, totally solid, but I think closer to the top of the card, they could probably have a really good match. Had the, of course, usual hardcore tag team match, Dash Chizako and Hiroyu Matsumoto defeating Aja Kong and Ryu Mizunami. I said it in the very last episode. These things sort of have a ceiling for me, like a floor and a ceiling. I thought this was like a 3.5-star match. There was really nothing crazy except Ryu Mizunami bringing a full-size tire to the ring to use in the match, which was very odd. But these are sort of like hardcore matches in that they're just sort of like, well, we don't want to enforce the rules and Dash wants to jump off things and do things. But other than that, it's mainly just people sort of wandering around. Aja uses the trash bin a couple times, and that's it. I mean, if you're looking for like hardcore, this is probably not the place to be. But if you've seen one of these, you'll know exactly what to expect watching this one. And then the main event was for the Sendai Girls World title, Chihiro Hashimoto defeating Mika Iwata in 21 minutes and 16 seconds. Kelly, I have to tell you, a hilarious thing happened to me while I was watching this match.
Okay.
So they had the long video package before the match, which is like, here's them when they were rookies and Hashimoto defeated Iwata and then won the title. And then Iwata won the title a few months back and Mako won it. And Chihiro, like the path of the Sendai Girls World title. The video package set up that Mika was going to win in my
mind. It sure did.
And I was watching the match and Mika's kicking out of all this stuff. And I was like, I think Mika's going to win, you know, and it's closing in on the end of the match. And I was like, you know, Mika's going to win, and we have to stop talking about this thing where Mika Iwata never wins the big matches. Yeah. Now she won the title, and she won it back, and the story was interesting that she sort of finally got to the mountain, got beaten, and now she's about to beat Hashimoto and sort of get over that last hill. And as I was thinking these thoughts in my brain, Hashimoto hit that power slam and beat Iwata, and I was like, oop, what? Oh, okay. And I was like, well, I guess everyone's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it felt like Iwata should have won.
It did. But there was what hurt the match for me was I never believed for a second that Iwata was going to win because of how she's been booked. And I think if the next time she gets a title match, they need to book her so strongly going in if there's any shot of her actually winning. Because they've done irreparable damage to her reputation as a wrestler, I think. Like, I will never expect her to ever win one of these big matches because they don't let her. Like, she gets beat like a drum.
It's what we just talked about, the thing of you can't have someone, oh, this is it, this is it. Oh, never mind. Oh, this is it. Never mind. You know, this felt like the time, and I'm like, okay, if she wins it here, you can sort of backfill the rest and justify it as she won the title. That was sort of, she can get there, then she lost it to Mako, and then this is, I can finally get over the ultimate hill of beating Chihiro.
Like, it's insane that they're just like, all right, cool, we're going to have Chihiro and Yu take the tag titles off of Iwata. Then we're going to have Iwata go and lose in a sub-10-minute match to Sari. And then she'll come out and challenge Hashimoto. And then she'll lose via power slam.
Yeah, just very odd. I also had the thought of like, oh, Mako's retired. Like, maybe she's letting other people move into the booking, or I don't know how the booking really works in Sendai Girls. So I guess the eternal optimist in me was like, oh, we're moving on to a new chapter. You know, they're on Wrestle Universe now. More people are seeing them. You know, that would be an interesting story. Maybe they're going to bring in, you know, more people. Speaking of, the one thing we skipped during Marigold is Mirai leaving.
Oh, yeah.
The promotion. I neglected. And, you know, what is she going to do? It seems likely she's probably going to go freelance, or it's going to be part of a storyline, which I think would be stupid.
She can join Darkness Revolution.
I was like, well, she could go to Sendai Girls. And I'm like, boy, you'd have Iwata as the champion. You'd have Mirai there. Like, you could do a lot of things, and now you can do less things. Also in Sendai Girls on the 27th, they had a tag team title match. Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu defeating Manami and Ryo Mizunami to retain the titles.
Isn't it like bizarre that they had that match after there was a number one contendership match for the tag titles?
Yeah, I mean, some of this stuff I don't really understand. You know, I don't understand the five-star, you know, Momo winning the five-star and then being like, oh, I'll wait, you know, give some other people title challenges and I'll wait until November. Like, no problem. In Ice Ribbon, Manami Katsu and Misa Kagura won the tag titles for an Anchan and Yapi. What else was happening in Wave? The end of the Dual Shock Wave, their tag tournament happened. Mika Ozaki and Tai Hanma, the champions, defeating Risa Sera and Yuki Miyazaki. Kohaku retained the Regina De Wave title over Yuki Miyazaki on September 28th. So that is everything that has been coming up. That has been everything that happened. What is coming up? Well, let me tell you, the answer is fairly little.
Not much.
Stardom has a New Blood show on October 4th. They also have historic crossover happening in China. The applicable matches for Stardom are, the main event is going to be Natsupoi, Seria No, and Saika Karara against the Hate Trio of Natsukatora, Ruaka, and Rina. There is going to be a Hanako Aya Sakura Future of Stardom title match. And then the opening match is going to be Miyu Amasaki and Starlight Kid taking on Ami Sorei and Lady C. I saw that there was a historic crossover and I was like, wow, is there like a huge show being set up that I've totally missed out on? And then I was looking at it and I was like, oh, never mind.
Yep.
No. And then Stardom has another Korakuen Hall show on the 11th of October. As of this recording, nothing has been announced for that show, so we will have to see what happens there. Tokyo Joshi will start their third annual, I guess we'll call it, Next Generation tournament that will start in the upcoming weeks. And Kelly, what is coming up for Choco Pro?
On October 5th, they've got a show called New Dawn, and that will feature the Super Asia title match of Rina Yamashita making her first defense against Antonio Honda.
And that's all that's coming up.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe we'll talk about the Korakuen Hall show.
Yeah, who can say?
Next time. But that is also, let me throw it over to Kelly for Kelly's Corner.
This week in Kelly's Corner, I'm going to ask you a question, Taylor.
Oh, okay, sure.
Where do you fall on the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
I would say that I enjoy listening to a handful of their songs. I wouldn't consider myself a fan of them. I would say if the song comes on, I'll be like, hey, fun song.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Do you ask?
I bring this up because so one of my local radio stations is essentially shuttering their doors. It's our local independent rock station, and they have been bought out and will be replaced by a Christian radio in several days, I believe. So they've just been doing fun, wacky stuff on the way out. One of the fun, wacky stuff days was it was just Red Hot Chili Peppers all day long. And I heard that in the car and I was like, ah, that's funny. And then they kept going like, oh, I cannot imagine like having to work somewhere where they just have the radio on and it's just Red Hot Chili Peppers all day long. You have to really like California for that, I think.
I mean, I think you'd have to like anyone to have just them play all day.
Yeah.
Unless it's someone with such a huge catalog that you can really be varied. You know, I mean, how many most famous artists have like two or three albums? So to listen to them all day, you're hearing the same song at least three or four times.
Yeah. So I can't imagine how many times like Californication got played.
Yeah, a lot of radio stations do that. There was this station a couple years ago that got shut down and played Rage Against the Machine, the same song, the entire day. That would be a true test of your willpower.
Yeah.
That's probably not the right word, but yeah.
One of my favorite radio station gimmicks ever is Chicago's The Drive does a thing once a year where they play their entire music catalog alphabetically over the course of like, I think like a week and a half. And so you hear a ton of stuff you normally don't hear. And it's really cool.
That is in how long does it take?
It goes like all day for a cut. Like it's like a week and a half long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Well, that has been Radio Talk with Kelly and Taylor.
Yeah, this has been terrestrial radio discussion.
Yeah. And this has been Jumping Bomb Audio. We will be back with you in 2 weeks' time for even more Joshi. Until then, bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, Noah, DDT, All Japan, Marigold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network today.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.